So I'm excited to be able to introduce Jason this morning. And Jason is from Los Angeles, so local here. And here is a fun fact about Jason. Last month, he went to Tanzania, and he climbed Mount Kilimanjaro. Has anybody else in the room done that? No. Wow, pretty unique. Okay. And Mount Kilimanjaro is the tallest freestanding mountain in the world. I hope it felt free when you were up there. So, welcome. You're welcome to go up and speak to us from the stage here.
Hi, good morning, everybody. Sounds like everybody's in a really good mood. Okay, we're here ready to laugh. My name's Jason A. I'm a compulsive eater, very grateful compulsive eater. Hi, everybody. And I stand before you here today free from my disease of compulsive eating today, provided only that I'm willing to pick up the spiritual tools that were so freely given to me. Just to get some numbers out of the way, I'm 8 years and 11 months of abstinence. Got a weight loss of about 45 pounds. I'm a full service sponsor, sponsoring at all levels. I have 5 sponsees. I have a sponsor who has a sponsor. And I truly believe that we go through the experiences that we go through in life so that we can come through them and then help other people. And that's what I'm so grateful to be able to have this opportunity to do that here today. And what I want to do is tell you a little bit about what I learned in CEA How. So this is going to be the story of how I became willing not just to work that spiritual program, not just to work the steps, not just to work the tools, but became willing to be honest, became willing to drop the perfectionism, became willing to be a worker amongst workers, became willing to forgive myself, became willing to like myself, became willing to even love myself. And willingness is really weird. I know it's the theme of the convention today. Willingness is strange because we talk about it as if it's something that we can kind of muster up and that if we just work hard enough, we can be willing to do this thing. I know that that's really what I thought before I came into program. And I find myself falling back into that way of thinking so often, that willingness comes from me. But it's strange. It's not something that I can muster up. It's not something that you can give me. It's not something that I can give you. I can't give anybody I meet the willingness to do anything. Willingness is really kind of in and of itself a miraculous process. One day I'm not willing, and then all of a sudden, for no apparent reason, I become willing to do the thing. And sometimes we call it a bottom. Like when we finally hit our bottom, that is when we become willing. But what I find so strange about that is that my bottom wasn't necessarily like the worst things got. It really wasn't. It kind of makes sense and it's logical that my disease would be progressing and all of a sudden things would be getting worse and worse. And then when I finally hit rock bottom, then I'm willing. But it just doesn't work that way. I really love how I love the gifts that this program's given me. I love all of you. This program has given me so much, and it's really taught me so much. And that's what I want to talk about today. If I forget anything, Ellie, please feel free to jump in and let me know. Where is Ellie? I don't have my glasses on purposely, so I don't get so nervous up here. Okay, so here's what I learned. And I'm not picking on Ellie. I'm sorry, guys. Okay, so I learned that I have a disease with no cure. I learned that negative thinking is a large part of my disease. I learned that this disease talks to me in my own voice and that it's a fault-finding disease. And I learned that it finds fault in other people and myself so that I can then judge those things so that then I feel superior, which is really kind of all to mask like feelings of inferiority that I have in myself. I never really thought very highly of myself. you know? And that was something like, I never knew that when I came in the rooms. I had to do this work to really kind of get to the place where I said, gosh, I really just, it's more than just like, oh, a low self-esteem. One of the reasons why I love How is because I say, I belong here and I know that I belong. I'll come in. And if I were to say to a normie, you know, I just really hate myself, they're going to be like, oh my God. That's so, and they're gonna be like, no, that's so, you know, and they're gonna try and convince me that that I'm a good and worthy person. And when I come into How, a lot of you are like, you hate yourself? Great, we all hate ourselves too. Like, come on, have a seat. You're in the right place. I mean, we get it. Like, normal people would not laugh at that joke. I grew up outside Chicago. I was born in 1977 to two loving parents. They had their faults. They did the best they could. They did a really good job with me, actually. I grew up, I didn't have a lot of self-worth. I was a very anxious kid. I was a very nervous kid. It was hard for me to make friends, and I just never really felt like I belonged. Beginning from age 13 is when I first remember my compulsive eating coming up. I remember in school, we would have like assemblies where there would be, I don't know, somebody won, some sports team won, or we won an award and we have to celebrate it. So they would come in and the whole school would come out and there was like tables of food and everybody would line up and you know, you would kind of, there were 50 people in front of you and you look at all the tables there and everybody else is just chatting and talking and laughing and goofing off. But I was just eyeing the food. And I liked the food, and I wanted the food, and I wanted specific parts of the food and specific amounts, and I needed it kind of cooked or browned a certain way, and I wanted to make sure I got the biggest pieces, and I was nervous, even at age 13, and I was just watching, you know, and I remember getting up there, and I would be struck by this feeling of fear because the amount of food that I wanted, I would have to put on my plate. But it was too much food. It was like more food than anybody would get. So I knew people were going to kind of make fun of it or say something. I mean, that's the thing about my compulsive eating is I don't want anybody to talk about my food or my eating or my body or anything. Like, I don't want somebody to ask anything about my food. Even if it's a compliment about it, weirdly, I sort of would hear it as a negative. So I knew that at age 13 that if I were to put the amount of food on my plate that I would eat at home, that people would be like, wow, that's a lot of food. You gonna eat all that? Or some stuff that would just be like a dagger to my heart. And so I learned that if I walked slowly that to the table, that I could sort of be like eating and taking bites out of the food while I was walking there. And that by the time I had sat down, if I just timed it right, I would have already eaten like a quarter of what was on my plate. So by the time I sat down, I kind of had what looked like a normal amount of food. At age 13, it's just crazy. I don't think many other people were doing that. I also remember I go over to my friend's house. I was probably 13 or 14. It was cool because my mom would drop me off at my friend's house and his parents were away at work and it was the summer. And we would hang out all day, like watching movies and playing video games. He would make some food. He would make lunch for us. And he would cook food that was what I would cook for myself at home. Except it was, he would cook the food and he would split it in half and he'd be like, here. And then he would take his half, which actually was really funny because he was like twice my size and he would take the exact same amount of food that I took, which I thought was kind of sweet. But this was the problem, is that the amount of food that he made for both of us was the amount of food that I would eat by myself at home. So I was kind of nervous. I actually remember feeling nervous when I would make plans with him. Like I was already thinking, oh man, but I'm gonna go over there and he's gonna make the food and I won't get the kind of food. This is like in the morning before I even left. Just completely compulsive and obsessed with getting getting what I needed. And Julie, you came up and you talked about sugar and flour, but you left out my favorite one, which is actually quantity. That was the one that really did it for me. Shame was a large part of it for me, shame too. Because as I got a little bit older, I started sneaking I guess I already talked about that, trying to hide the food that I would eat and the amount of food that I would eat. Got my driver's license, realized that I was now in control of where I went and what I bought, and I could sort of just like let loose with my love of fast food. And I would wait until my parents and my sister would go to bed, and I would kind of leave the house and go drive to one of the many late night fast food places and get some food and then bring it back to the house and eat it. And then of course, and this went on for years, I would like throw it out and like hide the wrappers. I like, let me put this other garbage on top of that so people don't see, which is, the funny part is that years later, I had talked to many people who were like, dude, you didn't really hide it very well. Like, and we can hear your car starting and you driving away. I can remember being in my 20s actually. And I mean, this was the problem. Like, I couldn't stop. Even if I got obsessed with my weight, and I'll talk about that in a second, but I couldn't stop and I couldn't control the amount of food that I ate. And I remember getting in bed and, you know, I had brushed my teeth, I'd turned out all the lights, I'd gotten in my pajamas, I'm in bed and I'm laying there and I can't sleep. And I get in my head, oh, I could go to this fast food place. And I remember multiple times I would get out of bed and I would get dressed and I would drive there. It'd be like 11:30 midnight and I would go there. And I hated that I did this. And I hated myself for doing this. But I couldn't stop it. I told you I didn't think I was good enough. I didn't think I was really worthy of being loved. I was eating constantly to run away from my character defects, from my jealousy, my grandiose thinking, my judgment, my terminal uniqueness, driven by 100 forms of fear and a need to control other people, places, and things. I got to the point where I think I was kind of unable to feed myself even without binging to some degree. And I was just killing myself. And even though I wasn't okay with it, I couldn't stop. I got into my 30s. One of the big turning points for me was I got sober. I stopped drinking alcohol. As I'm sure you've heard or experienced, when you stop doing one compulsive behavior, you kind of turn to the other compulsive behavior. So I started eating even more. And I was going to places where other people were drinking or talking about drinking, and I would just eat. I started gaining weight. Then my body dysmorphia came out. I was obsessed with how I looked, always looking in the mirror, always just pinching and poking and prodding and weighing myself and trying to get on this diet or that diet or working out a certain way. Got to the point, I mean, I was like weighing myself daily. I'm sure I'm not the only person in this room who has weighed myself daily, right? And what I was looking for was power. The big book says lack of power, that's our dilemma. I didn't have the power to do a lot. I was looking for some kind of power so that I could control my eating. And I just thought if I weigh myself once a week, maybe I didn't think about it this way at the time, but I thought maybe that'll give me the power. And if that didn't work, if I weigh myself daily, maybe that'll give me the power. Well, that didn't work. Filling up pages in a notebook. Then I thought, well, I just can't see the data right. I need to really be motivated by seeing this data. Maybe I'll type the weight into some Excel spreadsheet and make a graph out of it. That's kind of grad level. That's graduate level. I was looking at the graph. Well, guess what? That didn't give me the power either. I went to my doctor, and I was probably 35 or 36, and I at the very end, I mentioned, by the way, I'm really having trouble with my food, can't stop eating. And he went, let me give you something. And he got back and he gave me a piece of paper and he said, here, this, and he pointed and it said basically like, Joseph was written out everything that everyone already knows about how to eat well. Like, this is, follow this diet. And it was avoid these foods, eat this amount. I mean, I knew when he showed the piece of paper to me, that paper wasn't going to give me the power to stop my compulsive eating. And then he said something that was a bit of a turning point to me. He said, well, you know, also, you know, you're of an age, and when people get to a certain age, you know, usually for men it's around 40, you know, they start gaining some weight, and it's, you know, it's harder to get the weight off. And look at me, I've been trying to lose this 15 pounds for 20 years. And it's not that big of a deal. If I didn't have this disease, I probably would have just laughed along with him and went about my life. But what What I actually heard him say was that you are screwed. There's nothing that's going to help you. There's nothing that's going to give you the power. And I heard him say, you're going to keep gaining weight and you're going to be fat and you suck. That's really just what I heard him say. So I went out of there and, you know, I was seeing a therapist, thank God. And so I was telling my therapist about this and she said, you should go to this program called CEA How. And I said, what's that? And she said, well, it's a 12-step program and the people, you know, there's overeaters and non-eaters, which, by the way, I tried. It's a great program, but I don't, you know, I can't get, that didn't give me the power. Defining my own food plan, I will say it got me off fast food. I didn't eat fast food for 3 months. But what really is fast food? How do you define fast food? Is fast casual fast food? If something's delivered, is that fast food? I still gain weight, okay? I'm sure I'm not the only one. She said, go to CEA How. She goes, I don't know a lot about it, but I know that I went to it in the 90s and everybody's like, they're like skinny there and they're happy there. And it's like, I think you should check it out. What is CEA How? She said, well, it's kind of strict. There's a food plan. It's 3 meals a day, nothing in between. You call in your food to a sponsor. You don't eat sugar, you don't eat flour. You weigh and measure your food. And I was just laughing. I said, nobody does that. Come on. Why would anybody do that? What? I'm not doing that. That's ridiculous. Which is kind of interesting when you think about it, because what I was really doing is kind of like arguing with her. And she picked up on that. She said, hey, do whatever you want. I'm just saying, I was there and it looks like there's something that might be there for you. So went home. Googled CEA How meeting. Sorry, I'm not going to this. There was a meeting, and people in this room know how few How meetings there are.
Yeah.
There was one 2 blocks from my house, like the next day. And we go back to the willingness thing for whatever reason. Now that, like, I want to stand up here and say, and that's why I went. That's not why. I don't know why. I could have just not gone. Just because a meeting's 2 blocks from your house doesn't mean you go to it. But I went. I just was willing to go. I just somehow, the willingness was given to me. It was grace. It was just sort of like, it came from somewhere else. I was given the power to go to the meeting. As some of you have heard me share, my plan was to go in late, hang out in the back, don't talk to anybody, just listen, and then maybe like leave a little early. And I got there, and I somehow screwed it up, and I got there 10 minutes early. There were 5 people in the room who all looked at me and greeted me and introduced themselves. Hi, come on in. What's your name? We don't get a lot of newcomers here. What are you doing here? Tell us about yourself, blah, blah, blah. Check out this literature. Here's a brochure. Here's this. I was mortified. And I went, and I just heard something that I guess clicked, and then I was given the willingness to go to a second meeting. And I got a sponsor, and the sponsor who's in this room said, okay, I'll sponsor you. Call me tomorrow. Tonight, here's the food plan. Go read it. But tonight, go eat whatever you want. It's your last night. Go have fun. Now, for years, I was like, what the hell is that? Don't do that. It's like, I'm never telling a sponsee that. But the thing is, it was great because I thought, awesome, I'm going to go get all my favorite fast foods. I'm going to, like, this is going to be awesome. I can go home and eat without the shame. That's all I ever wanted to do, was eat my food and not feel shame. And you can probably imagine that it was not like the glorious, happy evening that I thought it might be. It was dark. It was, in the words of Deb O, kind of violent. It was weird. Like, it was awful, and I felt more shame than ever. And, you know, I've passed out. Like, I fell asleep on the couch, and I woke up, and I still ate. Like, it was horrible. And that really was, I think, my bottom of bottoms. It was awful. And then, I mean, look, I just kept coming. I kept coming. I learned amazing things in How. I learned that I had a spiritual malady. We talk so much about the physical. because food is physical. We do physical things with it. We are all probably obsessed with our weight, and the weight comes off. But I learned that I had a spiritual malady, and I learned that selfishness and self-centeredness was the root of my trouble, as the big book says. I learned that for years I've been making other things my higher power. So I've been making food my higher power, drugs or alcohol, other people, sex, video games, reading. I can kind of make almost anything my higher power. I had no connection to a higher power. I was like an agnostic. Sometimes on good days, on bad days, I was just a straight up atheist. I don't wanted nothing to do with that. But I learned that there was a solution in the big book that worked for other people. And so I came in and I admitted powerlessness. I turned my life and my will over a higher power that I didn't know if that was there or a real thing, but I was willing to do it. I cleaned up my past with steps 4 through 9, got integrity through that process. When I came in, I didn't know what that word meant. I'd heard it. I had to look it up. I mean, I literally Googled integrity definition. But I did the things that were suggested to me. I just found myself doing them. And then I got to steps 10 and 11 and 12, and I learned that those are how I maintain my spiritual contact that I had gotten through to my higher power. So I maintained those. I learned that helping others is the foundation of our recovery, and that it would become then my message to not just live the principles. I mean, certainly not just do the food plan and then the 7 tools, but that those things just helped me keep my spiritual channel to that higher power open so that I could spread the message that there's this solution for compulsive eating. I learned that that there's different kinds of spiritual experiences, that I was having a spiritual experience of the educational variety, slow, kind of boring, not something you really want to, like, that's going to make you the center of attention at dinner parties, this spiritual experience of the educational variety. By the way, if you haven't read it recently, go read Appendix 2 in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's called We Agnostics, and it's like a page and a half. And it talks about this, because when they first wrote the big book, a lot of people read it, and you read Bill's story, and this guy's having literally God is speaking to him and appears in front of him, and there's white lights and trumpets, and he falls to his knees, and it makes a great painting, and that's that. And it's easy to read that and think like, wait, what is this? I don't have that. Am I doing this right? Like, I don't really... Am I not having a good spiritual experience? Well, Appendix 2 lays out, most people don't have that. And I never had that. I've never heard the word of God, really. For me, my higher power speaks through other people, speaks through my sponsor. I'll share something with you guys. So it won't surprise you that I have imposter syndrome. I never think I'm good enough for the thing that I really am probably good enough for. My perfectionism gets in the way. It tells me, you won't do this perfectly, so don't even bother. And then, just not even don't bother, just then tell everybody how bad at it you are. Just like, it's terrible. So I call my sponsor and say, man, I'm supposed to speak at the CHOW meeting. It's in a week. And I don't know, like, I told him all the stuff that you do that you don't, like, tell your sponsor. Everybody does this stuff. We all have stuff that's like, you know, I didn't do this thing, or I ate this thing. And then it's like, I was like, I did this thing. And then I did this. Should I just, like, not speak? Should I tell them I'm not, like, I'm not a good member? And he was like, what? No. Like, you're not resetting your time for that stuff. Like, you do this program really well, and you abide by the 7 tools, and you do this thing great. Go speak. Go do it. The reason I share that, though, is because, like, that's one of the ways that my higher power communicates to me, because I do not have the power to tell myself that. I just don't know. My brain will go, you didn't level off the spoon of this, so you should probably, you know, not go to meetings anymore, or whatever it is. I don't know what it is. So I want to share one other thing that was pivotal to me because I think this is important. Maybe somebody needs to hear it. When I came into the program, I had a couple sponsors, and one of my sponsors that I had really works like what I would call kind of a strict program, like kind of militant program almost. Like this is like, you do the deal. And it's very like aggro. And it worked for me. Like it actually worked for me. Somehow it kept me in the rooms and I did the deal and I did the seven tools. And I guess some of that rubbed off of me. You know, you sort of was like a role model and I would sponsor that way. And it works for some people. For whatever reason, you know, people move around and things change and I had to get a new sponsor. And I got a sponsor who was kind of the polar opposite. That this sponsor was very soft. This sponsor was very loving almost in a way and very accepting, I would say. I was telling things to this new sponsor that I thought for sure he was gonna either drop me or make me reset my time or maybe even kind of like shame me or have a tone of voice, whatever it was. And I didn't get any of that. And this sponsor was like, look, I am not your higher power, okay? I know that. I'm not going to pretend to be your higher power. So I'm not just not going to do that. And that was a pivotal thing for me that showed me how I could be kind to myself and how I could become willing to let go of that perfectionism. That's kind of what I want to, as I kind of move into this last part here, I want to talk about what I think is the most important thing that I've gotten from CEA How. I do not have that shame anymore. I mean, it's a human emotion. I experience it now and again, but the way that I was before is completely gone. I don't experience that. My outlook on life has changed. I mentioned the integrity. I get to keep this thing only by giving it away. You know, when I'm out there, what the steps 10, 11, and 12, I'm doing that stuff. And those promises have come true for me. This program, I love CEA How. This program really has given me a purpose in life when I didn't really have one before. It's given me, I mean, I'm not a huge religious guy, but like I feel kind of reborn. Like I really feel like a different person. I told you I was gonna kind of share what I learned in this program. And I think, I mean, we learn a lot in this program. We learn what healthy is. We learn what we're worth in this program. I had a negative opinion of what I was worth. I thought I should probably be paying you to be my friend. We learn what intimacy looks like with other people. We learn that God doesn't create junk. That includes you. We learned that we go through our experiences, I said this earlier, so that we can help other people. We can better relate to other people because of the pain that we've gone through. And I don't care if you have 20 years of abstinence or 20 minutes of abstinence. Like you have something that's valuable to another person and that somebody can, that is worth something to somebody else and can help them. I think if you're here in this room, if you can hear my words, you're a miracle. Not kind of, let me just own it. You're a miracle if you can hear my words. You have a lot of value as a person. You can help other people that you know because of this program. This program teaches us to be better moms, better dads, better brothers and sisters, better aunts and uncles, better teachers and mentors, better coworkers, better friends. And all we have to do is just on a daily basis, pick up that kit of spiritual tools that's outlined there in black and white. And that's kind of the question I'm going to leave you with today. Like the topic's willingness. Are you willing to drop the perfectionism for today? Are you willing to try to be a worker amongst workers today? Are you willing to be kind to yourself, to be honest, to forgive yourself, to love yourself just for today. And when you walk out that door, the question I'll leave you with is just think. Just stop and think. Who can I help today? Who do I know that I can call that might appreciate that call? Who can I say hi to? Who can I ask their name? Who can I help today? That's how we practice the principles in all our affairs. And when we are a program of attraction, we don't have to go out there and run ads for CEA How and tell everybody that they can lose weight and all these other things. That helps. But when we model the principles of selflessness, not all the time, remember to drop the perfectionism, but when we model those things, like, that's what will attract people to this program. So I'm really grateful again for you all to be here. I hope you all go out into the world and just a little bit more realize your value as not just a member of CEA How, but just a member of the human race. And I'll leave you with that. Thank you.